Greece. And one of the reasons why we closely read Paul is to try to come up with what Paul thinks are some of the important norms and boundaries for Christian community. These are not, I want to repeat this, they're clearly not all Christian norms are caught here, but these are some important ones about what to do in the community when the community and the individual have difference, or when people in the community, groups within the community, have differences. They're also some of the earliest norms that the church ever came up with, because these letters and the churches that they were written to probably precede the writing down of the gospel stories of Jesus. So in that sense, they're important as well. All right, that's all the kind of theoretical gobbledygook for now, but I want to have some examples of this to kind of spin it out further so that you can see what we're working with. And then feel free to raise any questions you want to raise about what I've just been saying. Example number one, Holden Village. If I were to ask you what are the norms of Holden Village, what would you tell me?
Well, yeah. I was thinking of a distinctive, which is ecological, harmony, shalom. At least it feels distinctive when I come here. That we treat the earth around us gently, and we try to live in harmony with it as much as we can.
And it's inclusive, like people that come up here, even if they're only for a week, they're accepted as part of the community.
And they don't all have to be Lutheran.
Mm-hmm. That's true, too.
You have to be respectful to everyone.
What was it?
Respectful.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And we are accepting
best birds.
Uh-huh. Everybody participates.
Uh-huh.
We eat together.
Uh-huh.
Hospitality.
Uh-huh.
Together.
All right, we're coming up with a whole bunch.
Humor.
Okay. You're picking up some of the core value statements, right?
Yeah, but I know those kind of in some way. I don't know why I do, but
I'm looking around to see if there's one of those Holden Village magazines here, but I think I saw them over in the library.
Yes, just across the hall.
Yeah, there's a list of 8 core values of Holden Village, right? And they include hospitality and hilarity and care for the earth and mutual respect. And some of the things you're naming are written down very explicitly. There are some explicit norms. I really should. Could you run over and see if you can find one of those? Because it would be interesting to compare.
Right to the right on the shelf.
Just to the right.
Thank you. What I'm curious about is how many of the things you just said are captured in the explicit statement of the core values of Holden Village, and how many of the ones you've said are implicit. There are two kinds of norms that work in communities. Some of them are written down, some of them aren't. So here's one I would say is a norm of Holden right now. I guess I wrote it down as the show must go on. So even in the midst of all this remediation work, the show is still going on. Not quite as extensively, but that seems to be of value. And I think we heard the directors speak to it sometime in the last couple of days.
Yeah, great mine workers.
Yes.
Village folks.
Yeah, that's a real way of being inclusive, isn't it?
Yeah, that's what I want, too. That's the best thing.
Yep, it is.
Yeah, I like that better than them versus us stuff.
Yep.
I like reconciliation and oneness.
Yes. Yeah. And I think you were speaking to an ecological attitude as well, Paul. And I also look around and I think of all the stuff that you all have been cleaning up in the last few days. how much of a sense of reusing and conserving exists, and whether that is different than hoarding. Who knows?
You know, we're hoarding even the rotten wood right now. It's just split it and stack it. It's not all great wood.
Yeah. Yeah. Bye.
I think hoarding is when you can't use it for anything, and a lot of the things here are useful. We just haven't found the use for them yet.
Yeah.
And some of them have been used to their utmost.
I think one of the norms here too would be that the belief that the only way these things get done is the power of the Holy Spirit working among us. And sometimes I think we forget that when we start listing all the things we should be doing. We can't do it on our own. So I think that's important to talk about as well.
You're right.
Otherwise it becomes law.
Yeah.
And we can't keep the law without.
I've really always been struck by how in the story of Holden Village and its coming to be in the first place, there's all sorts of improbabilities, and I mean just the coming into possession of the land.
I got it, yeah.
Yeah, it's just crazy.
And that,
just,
and that is very apparent here with the that I see of the people that work here and come here is the movement of the Spirit, and it can't be done without.
Yes.
Which would be all the same things that Paul is listing. If you look at the whole of the scripture, he would say the same thing. It's only by the power of God that we can do this, by the Spirit.
Yeah.
We can't do it on our own.
What are the eight values?
Well, first I should say, it's really interesting. They have the vision, the mission, and then the core values. So you kind of get it in three different versions.
Yeah, so just read the core values.
I just thought that was interesting. Worship, theology, hospitality, vocation, diversity, grace, shalom, ecology. There's more than eight here.
Okay.
Gifts, study, rest, place, community, and hilarity.
Okay.
I think they're listed a little different on the website.
Uh-huh. Well, that's an interesting statement of norms that create or shape a community of a very distinctive type. And that means that other communities that don't share those norms have different boundaries. Okay, now, what are some of the norms of your congregations? That's another way to... And some of these are explicit and written down, some of them are implicit. Not written down, but sort of like in the water, and people know.
One of the biggest thing in ours is all are welcome.
Uh-huh. And is that practiced?
It's very much practiced.
That's very interesting, because lots of times that's one of the ones that you see that, you know, church signs that say everyone welcome, but in practice it's not.
In our church it is all are welcome.
Okay.
It tends to be a very liberal church, which may have other people exclude themselves, but they would not be excluded in any way. We have some conservative members that feel comfortable sharing there as well.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they're in the minority.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I was just about to say, I think for the congregation we were in Oakland, a certain type of political ideology was an accepted norm in that congregation.
But not written?
Not written.
Okay.
But I'm not sure if everybody would have felt comfortable there.
Yeah,
that all are welcome, but would, you know, do all feel comfortable? No.
Right.
I would say Bible study, worship, music, the community, helping out in the community with all sorts of things.
Uh-huh.
Habitat for Humanity and the Faith Hospitality Network, community garden, we furnish everything for that. Community center that anyone in the community can use.
And those kinds of things don't exist in every congregation. So there's a clear kind. Is there a written way in which that commitment to reach out is expressed somewhere?
Oh yeah, but I don't have it with me.
Yeah,
so.
But it is written somewhere.
Yeah, it is in our church as well, in their mission statement.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. We're the same way. We're much smaller, but tremendous service outreach to the community, which are not church.
Uh-huh.
I mean, like, an example would be, we fix every week 40 backpacks full of food for children in our community who don't have enough food at home.
Uh-huh.
And every week those are filled, so on the weekend they have food, their family has food. And that has nothing to do with church.
Yeah.
Yeah, we collect food too for a food pantry. And we have a preschool kindergarten with over 100 kids. And if people in the community want their child to go there and they can't afford it, there are scholarships the church provides for those kids.
So what you're talking about are practices. And in many cases, I think churches are at their best when their practices fit their norms really closely, so that we say what we believe God is calling us to do and we do it. Yeah, preaching and practice go together. In lots of cases, that doesn't happen either direction, frankly. Other kinds of examples of norms that you know in your congregation. Liz, you're an Episcopalian, right?
Yes.
So every week, what do you all say together in worship?
Yeah, that's true.
A lot of stuff.
Yeah.
Which creed does your congregation recite?
The Apostles' Creed.
Uh-huh. That's a set of norms that captures and describes our beliefs. We who subscribe to that particular creed believe.
We don't recite any creed, so maybe that also tells you something about our congregation.
It does.
We do all three creeds at different times, mostly apostles, but Easter is a nice individual.
Yeah,
we do too.
Okay. Any other things that you would lift up from your congregational experience about the norms?
I don't think this is stated, but we don't have any people of color in our church.
Mm.
So I would think that, I don't think that's the way they would want it to be necessarily, but you would think if you went in there and visited, you would think that was a norm,
mm-hmm.
that we're all white.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we have some Asians, I guess, but we don't have any.
There's an unwritten norm, right?
Yeah. It wouldn't be intentional and they wouldn't be welcome, but it is the norm for our churches.
Yep.
And Asians also.
And we have African Americans and whites. We're getting a few more African Americans, but it's far now than we have in our community. But they can be welcome settlers for our churches, but continue to go to the work and see the church because they feel comfortable there. They sing a different type of music than we do there. I'll call it gospel. I don't know if it is or not. In our church, we sing some of the hymns and some of the newer music, what I call 7-11 songs. Seven words sung 11 times. I don't care.
Well, and I wonder if that, would that be a norm, the
yes.
fact that we do the liturgy?
Yes.
Yeah.
Some churches are highly structured in their worship services, that and others are not. Some churches, you know, are very clear about the style of music. All churches are usually pretty clear about the style of music they will practice. That is a norm that's often unspoken. However, it is often highly discussed, even if it's not written down. So whether you're using contemporary music or gospel music or more classical hymns or evangelical style revival music, I mean, churches are characterized by that kind of.
And some churches will have a service that's the regular service, you know, what they're used to, then they'll have their contemporary service.
Right.
I don't know if any of the Lutheran churches have gospel too. Things.
And some have blended services too. These are all kind of typical ways in which congregations coalesce around certain preferred behaviors, and those are norms. let's see. Do people tend to walk in and out of church when worship is going on freely or not?
Oh, yeah.
In some churches they do, in other churches, you know, you don't. How long is the worship service? See where I'm going? Okay. We all have norms, and they create certain boundaries. So if you're used to going to a one-hour service with classical music, traditional hymns, and people stay, you know, pretty much in their place, And you walk into a service, into a Pentecostal service, where people are getting up and speaking in tongues, and the music is real different, and the racial makeup is really mixed instead of homogenous. It's often the case that we feel uncomfortable in places where the norms are not what we're used to. There's a lot of ways of talking about norms and how they create boundaries, but I've just pointed to one. I would say citizenship in a country is a coming under a set of norms that creates really clear boundaries as well. Some of those norms include things like being free to vote, having to pay taxes, armed service, special holidays that celebrate and acknowledge the birth of a particular nation. All those things, you know, in human communities, we have norms and they lead to boundaries between us. So we don't celebrate Bastille Day in this country unless it's kind of a fun, frivolous French thing that we're trying out. But they do. Okay, any questions or comments about this whole notion of norms and boundaries? Sometimes people just feel a little resistant to it, but I kind of talk about how it's just inevitable. It's just the way it is. It's not necessarily good or bad.
I think the only thing I would say is that sometimes people feel that the, for instance, non-liturgical, non-creedal, et cetera, traditions are non-liturgical and non-creedal. Every group has a creed, every group has a liturgy, every group has a style of prayer that they adopt and evolves with them. So whether it's lasted for, you know, since Athanasius or, you know, since Martin Luther King, you know, whatever, it's still the group trying to have a group identity, trying to say what Paul is saying about the body of Christ, that it's not an individual thing, that we are linked to each other, and these ways of saying that affirm that over and over, and it inevitably evolves, even if it's very slow in some traditions to evolve. But it is important to note that every group must have some markers,
yes,
to say, oh, yeah, I'm one of these.
That's us.
Yeah, that's
if
us.
If you don't have the markers, you're not a group.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah, I totally agree. Well, some of the problems in the Christian community that Paul deals with are the tensions between thinking of the community as one that is based on purity, real conformity to the norms of the community, or whether it's a looser way of defining or describing who's in and who's out, and it's focused more on including people even when they fall short. So that's a kind of a common tension that Paul is dealing with, and in one case, you remember that he talks about the man who's living with his father's wife and that he should be excluded. In another place, in Galatians, Paul talks much more gently about not wanting to judge someone who falls short and basically says if someone's detected in a transgression, you who have received the Spirit should restore that one in a spirit of gentleness. So even Paul goes back and forth on how permeable or how rigid the boundaries are of a community at any given time. I mentioned yesterday this Texas church that had a clear expression of hate the sin, love the sinner, and under that kind of banner welcomed in a gay couple to the church and said, you know, we love you, we disagree with your understanding and your lifestyle, but we love you. And you're welcome here, until it came time to shoot pictures for the church pictorial directory and the couple wanted to have their pictures together as a couple in the directory. All of a sudden the church said no. There was a big fight. I don't know if the minister got fired or not, but I think he did. And you know, that's a kind of a tension there that illustrates how churches struggle between a permeable boundary and a rigid one. There's a lot of problems like this in churches, and we're going to talk about some of these at this point in time. Keep in mind these five tests. We can come back to them and refer to them, but do you glorify God? Do you build up the common good or the body of Christ? Do you build up and serve others? do you promote harmony and peace? And are you using your mind in light of these prior principles? Here's a case. This is one I think I mentioned yesterday. One weekend when I was on call for hospital visits, one of my colleagues called me. She informed me that the niece of our custodian had been struck by a car and was in the emergency room at the local university hospital. Another minister and I arrived at the hospital, spent some time talking and praying with the family, and then stood by them as their daughter was taken off life support. Following this, I spoke with the custodian and his brother, who informed me that they would like to have a funeral at the church where I worked and that they would like for their minister to officiate. The next morning, as details became clearer, I discovered that the church they attended was a local enclave of fundamentalism and that the minister who would officiate was the very same person who had organized and keynoted at a local I Love America rally where he told gays and lesbians, Muslims, non-Christian immigrants, liberals, and a number of other groups to find another country and stop polluting ours. I brought the issue to the staff, all of whom were puzzled as to what the best solution to this situation might be. I collected this from one of my former students. I love it when they get out there and have to face these kinds of problems. I'm going to divide you into two groups. So let's see, from here over. So we get five. James, if you want to join the group, you're welcome right up here, this group. And I would like you to turn your chairs in, face each other. How would you deal with this? If you want to follow Paul? Going to give you about 5 minutes to think about this.
Yeah, I was just
what would you do and why?
Maybe they could rein in this guy that way.
I know what I would. I would love them to sit because, you know, if we're preaching that we love everybody, accepting everybody, even if we disagree with them, then all of a sudden we don't, you know, let them do this because we disagree with them. That's kind of like a problem. That's not very fair.
Negativity. But another person is going to say,
although I'm wondering why they wanted to use
community and
that specific.
It's a good question. Why that?
Like, oh, is it
open a door?
That specific.
Sometimes other churches are used.
I know the
space is different, but there's newer than the rest, and so it's real
church. And specifically, that we build up the Church of Christ, because this man, even if he disagrees with his politics, is also part of the Church of Christ.
Yeah,
as is the gentleman who attends the service.
Does it build up in some others within and without mutual affection? If we do mutual affection, we build within and out. But does it promote harmony and peace? It definitely doesn't promote harmony and peace. If he's going to preach, what he preached before.
But if he's just a
lesbian or a girl, that's just a thing. And he's not speaking to that community. He's speaking only to...
Here's the case up on
the screen. I mean, it's okay
the people that are with them or whatever.
Welcome.
You know, so I
just want to be the
so your congregation is voting on that?
It's voted already.
I think they've already done that. That's part of the Constitution. They've instructed the secretary to sign off the names and if it's two women or two men, some way she's supposed to.
They're not up there anymore, but yeah.
I'll move back up.
Yeah, I was thinking that one of the critical things here is to involve somebody through the pastor to arrogate into yourself the decision making. Certainly, the pastor, as representative of the nation as a whole, has a role to perform with the community, but the pastor also needs to be, I think, invested in the council of the church and in a deliberation process that includes those elders.
The other thing I would say, just pragmatically, is I'd like to know what's wrong with doing it.
Given the responsibility to make decisions together, not just do this.
What's up there? Do they not have a church?
Recently figured in the
Yeah, if they're celebrating,
I've been on the church council.
If they're, church, that could be a good one.
Doesn't say whether they're constitution or something either. But for a funeral, even if you're out of town, you go to what people.
Would it be appropriate to ask what type of ceremony you offer?
How, permission and all that sort of stuff.
I mean, for instance, I grew up, he's done something already that's a little bit ridiculous, which is his concert.
Or offensive in other people's minds.
That specifically said he could not be a church member and.
Well, also if you made it clear, like we're talking about norms, if you made it clear to him what your norms were and then he should.
He needs to follow.
The Elks.
Yeah, and not that, you know, you have to follow these rules if you're coming to this church, but more like.
And because they said this is not in harmony with our curriculum.
Our side of it too, I guess.
And
see what he could do, if he could accommodate your.
When I realized what that did.
And you want to accommodate their needs.
There was a very tentative set of boundaries that.
His, the needs were the people who requested this facility. They asked the pastor to speak, that's their thing, the pastor.
I didn't mind that.
They asked you.
But I felt like I needed to go out of those boundaries. And to the community.
But would it also be a witness to the community if you say no to somebody?
One of the important things that I began to realize was that, again, a congregation.
No, that's what I.
Has to have a sense of its place. Its worship space, how exclusive is that worship space?
Right, and if, like, the other side of that is if you say no to him, but you can't be there, it cannot have the service.
Other people would look at it much more openly.
What I would assume that the person of church who's opposed to these things.
A service to the community.
And so if you get known as the church who said, no, you can't go to the funeral, it makes very much sense to this young girl.
Oh, you know, we love and accept everybody as long as you're a Caucasian of a middle class Christian that, you know.
Right.
People said that's what this is.
Straight.
No, this isn't.
I mean, I was different than.
Right, this is a.
Church community.
And again, the community wants to figure out how certain it is of its own identity. To be able to say, oh, totally disagree with this guy.
Uncle.
This is, we're really concerned about this custodian's family. That our pastoral care for this family means that we can know this and in this instance. Because we know who we are, we don't think there's any conflict. People will still know that we aren't represented by this particular
sheep's clothing.
What you say, you know, the facility,
you know, and so when somebody hears, you just don't like it.
It shouldn't happen.
You know, that's what they'll hear. Even if you care for craft a message about inclusivity of people who are Canadian and immigrants or whatever.
Sometimes it's from
According to these tests, I mean, look at three and four.
You're
renting to them.
Yeah, we're renting to them.
And I think you have a fair, you have a right to ask.
I should answer.
What did answer would be like one of those two?
Joan, the Bible, you know, that
I mean, he's going to be doing the same thing. He did a really good job.
This goes all over to that, but it's, it will always be something
well, that she's pulling for.
I mean, if he was respectful,
I was just thinking of just service.
That would be fine.
The congregation of the church wouldn't even necessarily have to know that a funeral ever happened.
Well, even if
happened in our church,
so I
but what I'm saying is. My guess is that this is more complicated because people in the church are custodians and they might like
it. And
by attending
But I think you are, you should ask and you can evaluate how his response or his
church criteria.
And if he's going to do the right thing and everything else, then could you abide by
well, in the summertime, if they were having some kind of celebration for the weekend,
people did all the time. This is our house.
I think that's possible, but I still think there's a potential that you could have that because of the respectful conversation about the COVID.
Or thanks. These are our values, what to help you reach in a way that, like,
like meets these values, but at the same time, he hears something different than what you're saying and says something during the service.
Yeah.
Well, you can't, you can only do so much.
Well, of course, you have one who wants to ride in, not totally, you know, as a farming.
He will understand your.
So.
But I just think this concept of relaxed the rules of the department, and I've read to him that to say, well, it was after law, they did this frequently, like, in a committee of services, we are looking at,
and we've drawn boundaries over various pieces of officer.
It might have been those.
And I think that comes across to you, just to go, I know, or.
Like, they had their own.
Being very specific. So I think that's a big question for us.
Well, I do, but also, Army Cross.
You're called low, which is.
Over and over.
Where
we actually come across to be, when we think being inclusive of one group, we're actually.
Well, I mean, it's.
For maybe very good reasons, and I mean, it's worth it. But the way that that can come off, that's what it is. Like, we're not opening in hospitals, closing the doors.
Okay, about 30 seconds, and we'll gather back together.
Gospel, which I think is possible. I would not be happy to live where I live. What if that passed?
You have to be inclusive.
And if the congregation builds this facility.
Right, I mean, you can be inclusive to the standpoint, saying you are opening yourself up.
Then you're definitely trying to be inclusive.
Trying to. No, no, this is to understand where you're coming from.
This saint, this saint's bones.
What's the promise?
Underneath this altar.
If he doesn't, if he can't,
everything done, then you have to stop. You don't know the bishop or this.
Okay, so here we are.
And it's a very.
Five tests of Christian community. Here's the case. And you all bring me a few thoughts from your group. Sounds like everybody was talking pretty animatedly for the whole time. I hate to cut that conversation short.
We weren't getting any answers.
Well, that's the nature of the beast. You mean any correct answers?
What is it? I don't think we were getting any answers. We were just bringing all kinds of questions, though.
Good. That's the first step. That really is a wise thing, to ask as many questions as you can so that you can find out as much as you can in order to give the wisest response or make the wisest choice. How about this group over here? A few thoughts or comments that came out of your conversation.
Well, of course, you know, we all have like slightly different ideas, mm-hmm. and we have a little bit of different opinions that we were sharing of what we thought. I can share mine if anybody else wants to.
Go ahead.
Well, what I think is that they should be able, that they should share it because if, you know, if they're saying, you know, we welcome everyone, we're open and we love everyone, then, you know, excluding people just because of their beliefs, that's like the exact opposite of what they were saying. Like, you can't say, we love and accept everyone as long as they're middle class, Caucasian, straight people. And that wouldn't make as much sense. And, you know, if a specific group that uses it causes them a problem, then maybe they should excuse that specific group, or, you know, they're doing things that they shouldn't be doing in any space. But then that shouldn't block out just everybody else.
Okay. Other comments from this group?
Yeah. Well, I would wonder.
Okay.
I would wonder why they wouldn't want to use their own church. What was the reason for being by?
So there's one of those questions.
Yeah. That
okay.
That's
all right.
It would be a good idea before that actually happened, that to share the core values of the congregation with the minister. That might temper his speech.
Uh-huh.
Maybe.
I mean, that was our big.
Well, fire them up.
our big.
There we go.
1 second. Yeah.
Well, where my mother went to church in a small town, the Lutheran church was a newer building. I think the Catholic church is newer now, but they're wheelchair friendly as opposed to this 100-year-old Methodist church that's got a rickety elevator. I rode in it recently. But so for those reasons, sometimes they've held a, I don't know, but, well, probably not Catholics since they have a new church, but because it's wheelchair friendly, other churches have used the church my own church, we ran into some of the, well, they happen to be African-American groups. They have small churches that are held in like what would be office space. So if they have a wedding and there's more guests invited, then they like to use our church.
Mm-hmm.
Or I don't know that they've had, well, we've had some funerals, I guess.
So accessibility became...
But it just depends, I guess, upon where you live and...
Mm-hmm.
And the size of your church building, too.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Some memorial services are huge in our town, so...
Right.
How about this group? What kinds of comments did you get beyond the asking lots of questions ones?
Well, that basically is the center of the discussion, the dialogue, because, you know, you want to be accommodating. Why wouldn't you? But at the same time, there's nothing wrong with asking how is he going to be proceeding? And let him know what your core values are. What's wrong with that? I mean, maybe he doesn't want to be there after he finds out who you are. That's his choice. But point being is, one of your values is to be accommodating, be open, and to be respectful for other people's interests and needs, and hopefully, accordingly, that will come through when he gives you the discussion back and forth. And then, if he can abide by all the principles that you have there, why not? If he can't, maybe you can have a discussion.
My problem still is that this is a typical progressive mainline response of being tolerant to the intolerant. So this person is fairly intolerant.
Mm-hmm.
Intolerant of people that I would want to be welcoming towards. So by being welcoming to him, you are also saying to gays and lesbian Muslims, non-Christian immigrants and liberals that you aren't too welcoming to them. I mean, you could potentially be conveying that message. So I would be slightly hesitant to be tolerant of intolerance. That's how I... So I'm a little less comfortable, and I think we both share that. I think you are making a statement to the community if this is something fairly well known.
Yeah, and that's why I think my question continues to be how clear, first within your own community of faith, are your values? And are you confident in who you are? And are you confident that you consistently live those out so that people know where you're at? I think that's a crucial thing for a community to be able to say, we know who we are, and we can afford to allow this venue, let's say for the sake of the custodian's family in this case. And you know, my goodness, we'll be fine. They'll be fine. But nobody will think that we believe what this person is saying and confuse his message with ours. And I think that there are many communities that don't have that confidence. And there are many communities who feel under siege in the sense of, you know, there are plenty of locales for that message. Let's be really distinctive every moment we can be and not be confused. So it's really a question of what's the psychology of your people, I think.
It might be a good opportunity for the church to allow that and bring up the topic so that you can further let everybody know how you feel and what your beliefs are, too.
Yeah.
You could counterpoint that way, you know, let them have it, and then when people question it, say, well, we believe this. This is what we're about. This is our norm or whatever you want to say.
I think that it would be really important, like, if you're trying to preach, you know, to love everyone and be open and accepting to everyone, that you have to act on that. I mean, if you're trying to, you know, tell them or to teach them that they should, you know, love everyone and accept everyone, then you have to love and accept them, even if, you know, you disagree with them, even if, you know, really don't like what they're doing, you know. Like you mentioned before, you know, you hate the sinner but love the sinners. So, and I also kind of wonder why, like, because we've just been talking about how much, like, how they're, you know, the Bible says, you know, to love everybody and, you know, do good things for everybody, love your neighbor, and
than a lot of churches preach hate.
You do have to make some discernment, though, because if you're going to say love everybody and let everybody come in, then you have to let the witchcrafters come in and do their funeral, and you have to let this and that. So somewhere you got to take a stand.
Or draw a line.
Or draw a line,
right. Make a boundary.
And that's the problem with this one. Where do you draw a line? Because they are Christian. But you have to draw a line somewhere. Otherwise, if you're going to be, anybody can come. Wow, you're opening up.
And you also have to remember that this is somebody who's harmed other people. So it's not just about loving this person. This is somebody who hasn't, in the bigger picture, potentially has harmed other people.
Right. Sure. This is the minister who's harmed other people.
Not the custodian.
Right. And his family. They may be totally different things. And also, let him know that, hey, you know, this congregation has gays and lesbians, or family members that are Muslims, or family members that are not Christian. They still come in and participate in our activities. We have a very liberal bias, and make sure he is comfortable being here.
Yeah.
Maybe he doesn't want to be there after that.
Sure. If they're saying, you know, that if they want to use the space, you know, if they know, and they probably will know, that like what the values are and the norms are, and then that shows, you know, that, and they're still using the space, maybe they're, you know, saying a lot of intolerance, but to be willing, you know, to use that as long as they're not abusing it. And in this specific situation, a child just died, so that would be kind of harsh to go to the family and say, hey, you know, we don't agree with you guys, so you can't use our space.
Yeah, I would maybe echo that. I think, that, not to say, oh, they should for sure allow it, but I think it might be helpful. I don't know. It's been my experience that when people die, boundaries may dissolve in a way that, you know, if this minister wanted to speak there for any other reason, there might be a much clearer boundary, but sometimes those boundaries are become more fluid when something really tragic needs to happen.
Well, I was just thinking, once in Alaska, a couple of Mormon guys came to church, and afterwards they said, we'd like to teach Sunday school for a couple of Sundays. And, you know, I said, you know, that's really disingenuous in my opinion, just letting you know that, you know, you have many, many venues in which you can do that, but this really is a place where we teach our values. And we'd love to have a dialogue with you outside of Sunday morning, regular, you know, Sunday school time. But no, this really isn't the place for you to do teaching about Mormonism. And I think you know that. That's rather ridiculous.
Interesting that you bring that up, because our church did allow them to come teach two Sundays.
Yeah, no, I just thought, no, you guys are, you have plenty of time to do that. And
on your own space.
Yeah, but it was one more, one Sunday Mormon, one Lutheran, one Mormon, one was still counteracting each other's beliefs.
Well, that takes me to rule number five, which is, does it make sense?
Yeah.
And to me, it doesn't really make sense to have a fundamentalist group using, we're assuming this is a progressive church, but it's not really stated, but it just doesn't make sense. There's probably plenty of other ecclesial venues in the community that would be more appropriate.
The thing that does make sense is the custodian.
If he's friends with a lot of people on staff and in the church,
that makes sense.
Maybe the custodian, if you go through a dialogue and he's part of it, maybe he will see the differential more than he's seen in the past. Mm-hmm. Maybe he'll make a change.
The custodian. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but it's the time when he's grieving.
Maybe he'll open up and say, hey, this is not cool.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay, this is great. This was a really very rich, the Council of Nicaea would have benefited from the wisdom you all have brought to the table today.
Oh yeah.
What was the end result?
If I'm about to show you, you might be a little let down, but you might say,
they co-officiate?
Okay, we spent all the time on this case, and I had three others in my pocket for today, and they're every bit as good. And I just added two more. The Mormon teaching one is a great one also to think about. Tomorrow we're going to come back and do some more cases like this, and we're going to jump right in on those. I think we have time tomorrow to do two or three really interesting cases that kind of raise these difficult questions to chew over and get us thinking about what are the wide range of possibilities and which ones are best. So thanks so much for taking part and being here, and hope we can do this again tomorrow afternoon at 4. I know everybody's pretty wiped out.